Are you afraid to talk about injuries as a performer? What happens when you don't talk about them? A lot of us have been through this. We know that injuries can and likely will happen. When they do, how do we process them? Welcome to Injury Management, Flying with Excess Baggage. I'm Stacey Clark, and I'm here with Emil Soitcher-Clark. No relation. Emil's motive is to draw on his own lived experience as a performer to take a trauma-informed approach to researching circus injury from a behavioral studies perspective. Can you tell me about your mission?
Of course. So what inspired my current field of research is a bit of a personal one. I had a handful of injuries in circus, and the decisions I had to make accordingly had many layers and influences to them. Now, a lot of these decisions need to be made in real time, in pressure-filled situations. So it got me curious. How do others process their injuries sustained in circus?
Let's talk about where you're at with your studies.
Yeah, so currently I've been finishing up a bachelor's degree in behavioral neuroscience here in Montreal. Part of the program involved a written thesis, where I had to conduct my own study and write a formal manuscript to defend and obtain my degree. So something really important for me is translating formal research that would otherwise be pretty unapproachable for those not familiar with the behavioral research into something tangible and easy to understand. After all, if I'm studying circus injuries in the effort trying to improve the well-being of performers, it needs to be approachable enough for performers to be able to digest. Now, my thesis manuscript has a few caveats that are important for the listener and you to know. I'm in the process of publishing this study, but it has yet to be submitted to scientific journals. So after I attempt to submit it, then it will be peer-reviewed by experts in the field of study. Now, this peer review process is essential for the validity of the scientific process. This means that I cannot draw steadfast conclusions with my study. Regardless of being peer reviewed and published, it's not my aim. My aim is to initiate a discussion about the lived experiences of a circus community. The emphasis is that this is not the only perspective, though. We all have a unique experience and perspective because life is subjective. Now, what my hope is to give a snapshot of what some perspectives are. This is by no means the gospel. So, based on my findings, decisions around injury management could be complicated by situational factors experienced prior and during injury, in addition to the physical aspects of the injury sustained by a performer.
This is a juicy topic. And clearly, you have a giant brain, so I'm interested. Please take us through the process.
Okay. So to start off, I began with seeing what the current research state is with injuries in circus. There are some injury rates that researchers have proposed, and some definitions of injury severity. But there is a bit of a paucity in the current research of how a performer will approach their injury management decisions. And considering many performers come from a dance or gymnastics background, and many of the maneuvers that you do in circus are similar, I began my reading there. I borrowed some concepts and models suggested from sport to guide how I studied the circus injury management decisions.
When we talked about this previously and were preparing together, you brought up a fun analogy about injuries being like baggage. Can you explain that?
Yeah, so I like to use an injury analogy that my mentor, Dr. Teresa Bianco, uses in her field of sports psychology. Now, I like to think of injuries as the baggage that you have with you on a trip. I feel it also applies with injuries in circus. When you're healthy, discussing injuries is generally kind of taboo or frowned upon. Most of us don't want to talk about it, and if you're me, it was out of superstition that talking about it is ominous and could somehow jinx the good health. Now, when you get injured, you're carrying baggage that you packed prior. Now, pretend that you're going on a sunny vacation. In that baggage, you're trying to keep it minimal. What is in that baggage we carry? We carry our past experiences, beliefs, attitudes, and it can impact our perceptions. Our bodies physically have to carry it. Now, what if your back is sore from carrying that bag all day? or you hurt yourself prior and have an issue that could get aggravated while carrying that baggage. Also, I would assume that you packed your bag yourself and kept it in your possession while at the airport. What if others have access to that bag and can tamper with the contents inside? So, you pack your bags expecting that the weather is going to be gorgeous and sunny, but you also pack for adverse weather. Or, if you're idealistic like me, you don't pack for adverse weather, which I sometimes am. Now, you prepare and anticipate, or you should, that there's a chance that it could storm while you're on your trip. I like to think of the same thing goes with injuries while performing. When it storms, or you get hurt, are you prepared with the things you have in that baggage, or is the baggage weighing you down and becoming a burden?
So on one hand, we don't want to prepare for absolutely everything that could happen while on vacation, but we do want to have just enough that keeps our baggage minimal, but adequately prepared for events that could happen by chance, just like injuries. So what I'm hearing is that we want to curate what's in our bag.
Exactly. And everyone has different baggage.
Your findings were drawn from an analytic autoethnography. That is a mouthful. Can you tell us what that actually is?
Well, I still really have trouble saying that as well. It's an analytic autoethnography. I had to practice that a bit. Essentially, I narrated my own experience and analyzed it as a case study to identify my factors that led to my behavior around injuries.
I suspect many of us travel with excess baggage. Let's dive into what's in your suitcase.
Okay, well, you're right. In my bag, I have this old bulky sweater of self-blame taking up a lot of room. I experienced this sweater of self-blame in both sport and circus environments. My acrobatic background was in trampoline gymnastics. Now, my athletic accomplishments were driven by the desire to impress others and prove something to them. Looking back at it, I lacked self-worth. I frequently felt that I was an inadequate athlete and a bit of an imposter. My success was usually met with scorn and coldness from national team coaches. I craved positive reinforcement. As a teenager, I sustained an injury, and a coach claimed that I got hurt because I was too heavy and not strong enough. This suggestion influenced self-imposed blame and body image issues, which was packed away in that suitcase for a later trip, literally. Now, by nature, we don't want to feel self-blame, so I would avoid acknowledging that injuries occurred. I felt that my injuries were my fault, and could have been avoided if only I had worked harder, because I didn't want to disappoint anyone. So, I should either work more, often to physical exhaustion to avoid injury, and I should not tell anyone if and when they happened. I was trained as a kid to doubt pain and be skeptical that injuries experienced were legitimate.
Thanks for being so honest and upfront. I think it's really meaningful that you can, in the trendiest word of the day, be vulnerable. In this conversation, it seems like you and surely others learn to, quote, push through injury at all costs, end quote.
I've never heard that before. I'm totally kidding. That's pretty darn common. Well, absolutely. I think not discussing injuries was quite normal in sport. For me, the belief that being injured was a character flaw, and it was very, very deeply ingrained. Now, I developed a mentality that was driven by the pressure to continue at all costs, similar to that age-old mentality or that age-old ethos, the show must go on. So I would downplay pain and injuries in fear that I was being judged by others, and exposing an injury exposed weakness and incapability. The same thought patterns essentially followed me into circus. Now, at a certain point, I redefined my identity when I transitioned from sport to circus. I like to call it my own little personal identity foreclosure. Although I moved from sport to circus, I continued to propel myself into a risky setting to avoid those painful emotions. Now, this new risky, thrilling environment was a place that I loved. but it was also a place that I sought to achieve that same thrill that I felt when doing tricky skills on the trampoline successfully. Now, leaving from the sport environment and getting this dream job in circus, it did not rid me of the habits and baggage of self-blame, low self-worth, and feelings of being an imposter that I harbored from my time in sport. Basically, these patterns ingrained in sport influenced my decisions related to injuries that I sustained later in circus.
I'm going to springboard off our baggage analogy. Let's unpack dream job. What do you know now that you would have liked to have known back then?
Well, that's one heck of a question, and I think there are many answers to that. But what stands out for me is the difference in circus is the peak of your performance. Rather than peaking only a handful of times a year when competing in gymnastics, in circus we're expected to perform consistently for upwards of, in my case, 300 shows per year. Now, I viewed this as a challenge, yet I was terrified of failure. I was terrified of getting injured and being rejected by the show and company that I was contracted out to work for. I had to shift my perspective for sake of longevity and sustainability instead of just getting through each performance as it came.
You're describing a specific contract type, one that is that of a full-time performer working, as you mentioned, upwards of 300 shows per year. In future episodes of this series, Mill will invite different perspectives from individuals who hold different roles, who have experienced different contracts and employment engagements. We're looking to get a good representation of all cross sections of the world of professional circus arts.
Yeah, well, essentially, circus is a pretty unpredictable career. So, also, you need to adapt quickly depending on your situation. You also need to learn to trust others. I had to quickly adapt to the group dynamic of my specific act that was compared to my individual experience in sport. Now, my apparatus was teeterboard, which in a duo or group setting has such a huge importance, as many circus disciplines do, on trust and transparent communication with other performers. In my case, this mutual trust felt a bit conflicting. On one hand, it was empowering that my act partner trusted me innately. Yet, I recall feeling a nagging sense of self-doubt that always would be creeping on my shoulder. If I had made an error, I feared that the cast and company would at large would realize that I wasn't capable, that I was an imposter of the show, even if my jumping partners and cast trusted me on stage. It was a terrifying feeling.
And to jump back to the analogy, a heavy suitcase. Let's talk about the injury or injuries. We're going to get right into your personal experience.
So I'm going to talk about two injuries that I sustained, and I'll explain why I want to talk about two a little bit later. Now, they're the two juicy ones of my circus career. I sustained my first big injury in a positive, supportive show environment. I felt safe and that I belonged there. The directors, coaches, medics, and cast of the show, we all worked as a team with honest and transparent communication. So there were proper systems in place to take care of injuries and other personal health concerns that came up. Our show schedule was usually about 6 days per week with rest between tour stops. In this instance, our board was having a mechanical issue, and we had not trained or performed our act in a month because the board was broken until that day. So when the new parts arrived and the board was fixed, the pressure was on us to swiftly recalibrate our skills for the show that evening, which I personally don't feel was enough time. We had one day to test the new equipment for the show, break in the new teeter board, all the while without compromising our safety.
You're describing logistical and operational challenges. How did other people's expectations of you play a role?
Well, I was pretty darn excited to perform that night. My parents were watching, and this was the first time that they would see me perform in my new life as a performer. I loved this show and was elated to show them that I had worked so hard to do this. Aside from being excited, I felt fairly normal. Normal for me was a mixture of excitement, nervousness, and an underlying anxiety of anticipation of whether the act would go well or not. I recall the normal feelings of fatigue, along with pressure to perform again after the month off that we spent with the mechanical issues on the board. Now, although my motivation was positive, those thoughts of self-doubt began to creep into my head that something bad could happen.
And you sustained an acute injury in rehearsal.
Correct. I was doing kind of a new-ish maneuver to warm up for the show without a spot, and I landed down and instantly felt excruciating pain in my heel. I had a bit of a poor landing on the edge of the board. So I stopped, I notified my act partner on the other side of the teeter board, I told our coach and the physiotherapist that was there. It was assessed as a bad heel bruise. Now, if you haven't ever got one of those, I do not recommend that you get one. They are damn painful. Anyways, the physiotherapist allowed me to have agency in deciding whether I stop and rest it or I continue and perform in the show. This could have been where they stepped in and forbid me from continuing. To put it bluntly, I was having trouble walking. So perhaps the agency was given to me from the physiotherapist because they understood how committed I was to perform for my parents that evening.
And that's the thing. Your parents were in the audience. Expectations.
So I, like many other performers, would have pushed through it. Don't let them down. My actions were mainly guided by the fact that they were watching, because I deep down wanted to seek their validation. I know that stopping to recover would have been the safest decision, yet the old habits of hiding the extent of injuries and needing to prove that I was capable influenced my decision to push through it. I did not want to let the team down and make my teammates work more because of my injury.
In a nutshell, what I'm hearing is that you were making decisions based on other people's expectations.
Exactly. I constantly evaluated how my injuries looked in the eyes of others. I assumed that my self-judgments were the same opinions others had of my injuries. Ultimately, putting others' needs and impressions before my own influenced my decisions when an injury occurred. Now, unfortunately, deciding to continue resulted in a stress fracture in my heel, which was identified by a medical follow-up a couple weeks later. This required a lengthy recovery before I could perform again.
Switching gears, let's talk about the financial impacts of not working.
Well, our bodies are a currency. In circus, we are the product in a live entertainment setting. For some, if you don't perform, you don't get paid. Now, in my case, I was extremely privileged that I had resources for injuries and I didn't feel financial pressures at the time. In reflection, I'm at peace with my decision to continue, regardless of the consequences. In another situation, it could have been different. The influence that the situation has can be a powerful catalyst in our decisions. So that trip I went on, pause for laughter. No. You're going to be hearing trip analogies all the time, okay? So the trip I went on, it wasn't perfect. And if you understood the pun there, I appreciate you. But I learned a lot on that trip. And I kept a few keepsakes in my bags for the next trip. This initial injury that I sustained in circus set an expectation for future shows that I would be part of. Now, fast forward to my second injury, which was, to put it bluntly, the opposite situation.
What do you mean?
So how do I put this? Well, you remember when I mentioned that teamwork and communication of the show environment of my first injury was fairly good? This was the opposite. It was every clown for their damn selves. So the show conditions were certainly not like the first, which led to me making a different decision in terms of how I managed my second big injury that I sustained.
And how was this environment different?
Well, the common complaint among the cast in this show was that we didn't have enough cast members. Now, the company management had curated a cast without understudy coverage. So there was no one to cover for our specific act in the case of illness, injury, or even vacation. The show quality could, as a result, be jeopardized should a cast member be absent. In fact, as a cast, we warned the show management that injuries would likely occur due to fatigue, stress, and being overworked if they didn't address the issue by adding more cast and to dissipate the workload. Now, these concerns were often dismissed and criticized. So as a cast, we had to protect ourselves from this show setting. The environment was such that we were encouraged to just, quote, keep going, end quote, just push through it. There was a large disconnect between what we were experiencing as a cast compared to the way in which the company management producers were communicating with us. I feel that this created an untrustworthy environment to perform in.
What did that feel like? Would it impact the show you were performing?
Well, as much as I love performing, in the setting I felt melancholic. I felt lacking motivation to do more than just the minimum in my performance. Now, just before my accident occurred, we spent close to a month without stage time to train our discipline. And this wasn't because of a mechanical issue or anything like that. We purely just didn't have the resources or time to train normally on stage. And I compared this tumultuous environment to that of my previous show experiences, like I said, which on the contrary had abundant training resources. After a few weeks without training time, I began to get disoriented in the air and mistime my skills. I doubted my confidence and abilities once again. It became a vicious cycle of stress and fear. I felt helpless, isolated, and riddled with anxiety. I felt like the only choice I had was not a choice at all, to continue at all cost, fearing that my job could be at stake. I had to go on stage and pretend like everything was fine and effortless, and for me, it felt inauthentic. Because on one hand, those outside the circus world expected that my, quote, dream job was such a delightful, whimsical, and inspiring lifestyle. I didn't want to burden them with my struggles, yet internally I was worried that I would be let go if I spoke up and I didn't comply.
Is it safe to assume that financial pressures were more of a factor in this injury as compared to the first?
Certainly, yeah. Our insurance situation was tenuous. We sorted it out with the company eventually, but this was after I sustained my injury. So this other injury happened when I was training a new skill to debut in the show later that day. I landed on the ground but was expecting to land on the board. This impact led to what my surgeon described as my ankle getting tacoed.
Ouch.
So I sat there and was immediately overwhelmed with anxiety that I would lose my job. So my number one mission was to hide the injury's severity. So without thinking, I naively attempted to reset my ankle back into place before the medic could assess it. It was my ploy to try to walk it off. Now, after the medic assessed it as being a soft tissue injury, they asked me what I wanted to do. Once again, I get some agency in the decision. After thinking back to the boundaries garnered from my other injuries in performing and gymnastics, where I placed others' needs before my own, fundamentally, I had realized what I did in that moment. Without medical knowledge, I reset my own ankle to hide the injury severity from others because I feared being judged and I feared being weak and I feared losing my job. I once again followed my trend of making decisions to appease others. This moment defined a super poignant juncture where I realized how dangerous it can be making decisions that can affect my safety just in order to appease others.
What was the outcome of that injury?
Medically, I was unable to return to performing as a profession. And that was a really tough reality to work past at the time. All of this to say, the two trips I went on with various baggage had many similar items weighing it down. Yet the situation of my baggage on the two trips was a lot different. Basically, these two injuries illustrate a common thread throughout my career. The injuries were sustained in different shows with contrasting support systems. In my case, my tendency to make decisions to please others from gymnastics transcended to my circus career and informed or influenced my decisions when I sustained an injury.
This is a pretty personal story, and we're hearing a lot of specific details. And as we mentioned off the top, on a subject that is not commonly discussed with openness because it is a little raw and it stings, and there's a lot of things wrong with what I'm hearing. But I think I want to just reiterate my appreciation that we're starting this conversation together and that you're taking ownership of this, that I'm hearing a lot of me and my and I, because this is your story and your lived experience, and in fact, very much not an effort to simply point fingers and suggest that all kinds of other people or other things are to blame. So I thank you for that.
It's my pleasure. But do you want to hear the kicker? Remember the study method that I did that I still can't pronounce? This was fairly similar to the discussion in my actual manuscript. And so I hope that I made science approachable for more than just academics or neuroscientists. So anyways, during my study, I began to realize that a lot of my injury baggage that I took on trips had a pretty clear trend across other participants that took part in my study with me. This got me thinking throughout the study and sparked an idea about the importance of having a professional setting with two fundamental components as a prerequisite for an injured performer. One, a safe space to discuss injuries without prejudice. Two, a supportive and communicative professional environment to perform in. So with these two things in mind, I got to thinking, how can we make these safe spaces for performers? And what specifically can we do to improve this environment should a performer sustain an injury? As performers, most have a thirst to evolve and improve our abilities. I think the same should be for professional environments and how we can improve them for the sake of both the performers, the shows, and the companies putting on these shows in terms of longevity.
And what about through the lens of others, coaches, directors, for example?
And that's a huge piece of the puzzle. I like to think of it as both a top-down and bottom-up process. And by that, I mean the top-down comes from companies, directors, coaches, and medical staff, essentially the decision-makers, and how they influence the performer's situation. But you also have the bottom-up process, which comes from the individual performers themselves and the baggage that they carry. I feel that both need to work in tandem to evolve some of the concerning parts of the circus performing landscape. So in this process, let's have some discourse and compassionate conversation with those that could be part of the top-down process, who may offer some more insight into the barriers experienced in making those changes. Now, I want to emphasize, this is not the blame game, nor is the purpose to criticize companies. That's not my motive at all. My goal in these next segments is to discuss other perspectives and spark some thought to those of you listening. So I ask you, how can we get better and evolve past some of the issues that we're facing related to injury management in the circus performing landscape? So to answer this and spark a discussion, I'm going to flip the script and I'm going to flip the roles. I'm going to be the one interviewing folks with various levels of involvement in the circus landscape.
One thing that's important to mention is that many of the accessible voices to participate in these segments are that of a white, Western, able-bodied demographic. We cannot claim to represent any person other than ourselves. Your experience matters, and we want your perspective to be heard, whether that's on an upcoming segment, in an email, or simply by leaving us a comment on the platform. Please get in touch. We do love hearing from you.
So next segment, I'm going to be sitting down with a former performer and now leader of a contemporary circus company. And we're going to dive into their lived experience and understand things from their vantage point. I'm Emil Soitcher-Clark.
And I'm Stacey Clark. Thanks for tuning in.